One of the toughest challenges for Christians today is to find a good church, a place where the gospel is powerfully preached, where worship is reverent, and the people have a genuine love for one another. Hi, I'm Mike Brown, pastor of Christ United Reformed Church in Santee, and I invite you to worship with us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. We also have Sunday school classes for all ages, including adults. For more information, visit our website at christurc.org. That's christurc.org.
Adorning Christ and His Gospel. Welcome to Abounding Grace. On behalf of Abounding Grace Radio, here is our teacher and pastor, Chris Gordon.
Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. And as always, we want to direct you to our website at agradio.org. Again, that web address is agradio.org. There are many resources there for you, maps to churches. Download the podcast, support us if you wish. All of your support, 100%, goes to the cost of the program. We're so grateful to our listeners for helping us continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio and keep it on the air and bringing these messages to you. The message you are about to hear is part one of a two-part message. I think looking at this, as I have preached through the book of Genesis for some time now, this may very well be the most important passage that I've delivered because it demonstrates before us what a repentant life looks like. Jacob's life had been in turmoil, in rebellion, running from the Lord. He really has been a scoundrel. He has lived up to what his name means, schemer or deceitful. And in this chapter, we have the first clear presentation in the life of Jacob of a changed life, what that looks like in somebody's life when a running sinner comes home. And that's what we're studying today. I've titled this message, The Prodigal Comes Home, from Genesis chapter 35. Here is part one, Genesis 35, the life and story of great patriarch Jacob. The prodigal returns.
The scriptures everywhere are describing for us and showing for us what it looks like to return to the Lord, to come home to the Lord. Again, using that language of the prodigal son, when he came to himself, he says, I'm going back. I'm returning to my father. It's wonderful in his house. Why would I stay outside of his house? And that theme of returning to the Lord, that imagery that we have all over the scriptures, is described in a call form that the Lord gave throughout the Old Testament to his people to return to him. I think of Isaiah 55, let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. In the book of Chronicles, you even had runners that were pictured as running out and giving this message of calling to return. The runners went through all Israel and Judah with letters from the king and his leaders and spoke according to the command of the king. Children of Israel, return to the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and he will return to you. All over. Come. Return. If I asked this morning, have you returned? How would you answer? Would that be a foreign concept to you? Would that be something that you've never really stopped and given a lot of thought of in the course of life, what it is to return to the Lord and what that looks like, and that is not just a one-time shot, it's actually something that will go on throughout the whole course of the Christian life? I want everyone this morning to look at Genesis 35, beginning at verse 1. You have a great call that God gives to Jacob here, and it's a very powerful call. It's an effectual call right at the beginning of Genesis 35, verse 1. And God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. I don't know how you feel when you read that, but what a wonderful calling that the Lord gives after a giant mess, isn't it? Come up to me. Come home to me. I want you to come home. Go up. Paul described the Christian life as this upward calling that God gives to us in Christ. Come. This scene had so much impact, I believe, as I was studying this week and thinking about the impact that this had on New Testament writers. This scene had so much impact on them that when they looked at this, they understood what was meant when they were describing the change that takes place of transitioning from the old life to the new life. And I think Genesis 35 was their passage to grasp what it looked like in reality when they were describing what a changed life looked like, the new life. I believe they said, there it is. They looked at Genesis 35 and they said, see, there it is. I love this passage this morning because what we see here already is God showing us now, after this long run in the life of Jacob, the righteous life that he desires. And it's so offset. Jacob had been running throughout the course of his life. And do you know how long now? 30 years. Where were you 30 years ago? 20 years in Haran. And then this has been a 10-year mulling around in the wilderness. And boy, Israel would have a lot to think about when they looked back at the life of Jacob. For about 10 years it took him to get back. In fact, we studied last week that he stopped at one point, and before he had even entered the land, he builds a house. He wanted to root down. Before he had even come home to the Lord, he wants to stay out in the world and in the wilderness, and he builds a house. He builds his own house, and he builds booths for his livestock, and he sets himself up. And then, of course, he gets up after that, and he moves to Shechem. And one of the worst scenes in the Old Testament plays out that we looked at last week. Remember one of the worst scenes where he sits there, he shouldn't have been there, and lo and behold, his daughter goes out to see the daughters of the land, and she gets raped. And it turns into this snowball. I mean, what an awful scene of the sons taking the sword and living by the sword and wiping out an entire city of people because of this, so much so that now Jacob is the target in this life of revenge upon all the peoples of Canaan. Everyone's talking about this Jacob and his family, and they all now have the bullseye on him. And what moved me about the account, if you remember, is that in that entire chapter 34, God's name was not mentioned. We were getting a window into what if God said, okay, you want the life you want? Go, 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 go. And he let us run for a little bit. He gives us a taste a little bit of what life would be like without grace. And it would be absolutely awful. Our lives would spin out of control and they would unravel and you would utterly wreck your life. You wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't come home to the Lord. And the Lord is showing us that in one of the worst messes, and this is what really encourages me this morning as I'm preaching this and studying this, in one of the worst messes recorded in the life of Jacob, one of the worst choices he made in life, what do you have at the opening of chapter 35? God didn't say, that's it, I'm done with this bum. He comes to him, and he calls him. God had not abandoned him. God did not leave him. We all should be standing back from this and thinking, that is remarkable. God's not mentioned in chapter 34. Jacob didn't want him. He's mentioned before, and it brackets the whole scene to show us, grace bracketed it before and after to teach us the great truth that God never left nor forsook him. Chapter 35 begins with God calling. God says, go up to Bethel and make an altar to your God, I love that. Did you notice how it's phrased? To your God, to God. This is what he's emphasizing here. To God, to the God who's redeemed you, Jacob. Go up to him. The God who had years ago dropped the ladder to you and came down to you and blessed you when you were running from your brother, when you ran and you shouldn't have run. You should have reconciled right then and there. When you ran and you can feel the weight of that, 30 years have passed. You've been running. And I can't help but think, you know, that there was a point at which Jacob could finally hear that call. I want you to ponder that just for a minute with me this morning. I'm not going to go real far into this chapter because I think it's one of the most glorious chapters in Genesis. I was always puzzled why God let him go in the first place. Jacob, you're going to go, you're going to run, but I'm going to be with you and I'll bring you back. And you stop and you say, well, why? Why even let him run this way? Why even let him do this and do these kind of things for 30 years of his life? And God had assured him in it, I'm going to be with you the whole way. And the Lord in his providence let him go. And he ends up in bondage, and he ends up in exile, and he ends up wrecking his life. And it climaxed here in the lowest point last time as the events of chapter 34 played out. The next words are, Jacob, come to me. Do you feel it? Come to the God who appeared to you. God's children, and you see it here, come to a point when they're finally able to receive that. You don't realize how many times in the course of ministry that ministers have stood up and said this to you. I mean, you know this is my job, right? My job is to say, come. My job is to say, come to the Lord. Return to the Lord. And over and over and over, ministers have said that, have said to you, come. And how many times have you heard that? Or maybe have not even heard it, and you thought, well, that's not really for me. That's for the bad sinners I was talking about earlier. That's for the bad ones, the ones who are out at the clubs. It's fascinating when Christ said, come. He said, come to me, you who are what? Weary. And heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. You don't come if you're not weary. You don't come if you're not heavy laden. You don't come if something has not greatly burdened your heart. And the reality was, Jacob was weary at this point. It's been a long life. He's in the sunset years. We've been studying his life for some time. He's been a traveler and a pilgrim whose life, you know, has been, he will say at the very end when he's standing in front of Pharaoh, few and evil have been the days of my life. I know what I've done. I know the choices that I've made. I know that I wrecked my life many points along the way. And finally, in Genesis chapter 35, God comes and he says, come to me at Bethel. And I'm taken by this because, you know, nothing has been quick about it. I'm not challenging that at some point somebody's justified once and for all. But turning to the Lord, nothing has been quick. And how many of you have had sons and daughters and we expect sometimes, and this is because of the Christianity today where we want the whiz, bang, bam results right then and there. We want it all quick. We want it all, we want to supersize it today. Nothing's been quick. God has been so patient with this man. I'm overwhelmed by it. I'm puzzled by it. Because which one of us would ever be this patient with somebody else? The reality is Jacob is weary. And what I love about it is God is inviting Jacob to consider what he experienced along the way. This is where the passage really begins to strike hard. God is inviting Jacob to reflect upon what he's experienced over these 30 years. When he stood at Bethel 30 years ago, God made a promise to him. Remember it? Behold, Jacob, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I promised, which is meaning he's never leaving. He's going to fulfill. He's going to bring him back. Through a life of falls and backslidings, here we are years later. What's the next destination for Jacob? Bethel. Jacob, there. Come there. Now, what do you think's going through the mind of Jacob? Here's where verse 3 is one of the most powerful verses in the text itself. I want everyone to look at verse 3. Jacob says, then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make an altar there to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone." As he comes to his sunset years, as he begins to reflect and he looks back over his life, he begins to ponder this promise of God. He begins to think about the promise of God. God said years ago, "I will be with you." And what has finally wooed him? What has finally won him? He looks at his family and he finally says, "Now, let's go to Bethel. I need to worship." Why? Because he's been with me all these years, as he said. He kept his promise. He fulfilled his promise. And I believe this is a very big moment in the life of Jacob. A very big moment in the life of Jacob. Realizing something about the Lord. We all have this natural sense that our lives are out of harmony with God. We all go through life and we have this sense. And some people just don't care. Some people care and they hope that they're doing enough. As I said earlier, that God will accept them. Some are really burdened by it. But you'll never really come. This is the point. You'll never really come until you know God this way. What do I mean? God has not just been with me the whole way, he says. But notice what happened along the way when we reflect upon it. Everything God turned into blessing. He plundered Laban. He flourished and blessed Jacob. You're going to see what he did even after this event in Genesis 34. And Jacob is able now finally to turn around and look back over the course of life and realize, as he's standing there, there are 12 sons right here through all that. And he comes out of that bondage full and rich. And the only reason is every step of the way, he's now reflecting, "The Lord has carried me. I got to go back. I need to get back." God's gracious descent upon him from start to finish, from start when he started to run, and then from finish when he's right at Bethel. God had descended both times. God had preserved him the whole way. And this is our lives as Christians. Do you pause and think about where you've been in life? If you look back and you think about your choices and where it could have gone, and then you start to reflect upon where it is today, what do you see? What do you see looking back? Do you see his presence? Do you see his blessing? Has God failed at any point along the way? It's such an important question. Because this is what begets faith. When we stand up and say, I want you to think, when you stood up years ago and you say, based on the same promises that were made to Jacob, God said he would do this for us. God promised that if we look to his son, we would be saved. And he promised he would never leave us nor forsake us. I want you to think for a minute about your profession of faith. I want you to think about it. You stood up and you were responding to promises that were made to you. You stood up and you were responding. But we really didn't know when we stood up here and we made the profession of faith, we really didn't know what his commitment to that would look like, and we really didn't know what our commitment to that would look like. You were somewhat naive when you did it. And it's only when you have some distance from that, when you have some time that's gone forward, and when he blesses us and you think about the blessing of having life to be able to see these things, that there's some distance and some great moment that you begin to turn around and you say, "My, my. He's kept it. He remembered his covenant. His steadfast love," says the psalmist, "is from everlasting to everlasting." All over the place, the psalmist keeps saying it. Steadfast love. It doesn't go away. It doesn't stop. It's always there. And I see it. Those comments are birthed from years. Those comments are birthed from years of experience. in the psalmist. Through all of your choices and everywhere you went, even when you refused to listen to him, he didn't turn. With him, there's no shadow of turning. He didn't abandon. He loved. Do you know this about the Lord? It's not just Jacob's God. He's your God. Come to me. Return to me. Do you feel it? Because there's something else that drove him back. What is it? When you stood up and you responded to the promises of God in profession of faith, when you were promising to the Lord, what specifically did you promise to the Lord? You said something to him. Young people, you said something to him. What did you say? You will be my God. You made a solemn promise when you stood up, and that's why profession of faith is so important. You're promising before God that he will be your God. What has been the reality? Jacob makes that profession at Bethel years ago, and for these years he's been wandering and mulling around. And has that really been true for 30 years? You understand why it's all of grace, because the last chapter just told us volumes about his spiritual state. And now Bethel, the first time, at Bethel the first time, what did Jacob say when he made the vow to the Lord? When he stood up and he made the vow to the Lord, he said, if you will do all this for me, I didn't like the way that was phrased because it sounded like a bargain, but it was some kind of step. It was some kind of step, remember, and we were happy with that. If you'll do this for me, then the Lord shall be my God. Did you hear it? First commandment. Here's what's on his mind. God's done it. God, he did it. I mean, the whole way he was with me, the whole way he's protected me, the whole way he flourished me, he's brought me back full. And guess what? I made a vow to him. I said something to him. I said he would be my God. I think at this moment he turned around and he looked at his wives and his children. And he looked at the blessing. And then he looked at something hanging in their ears. You know what was hanging in their ears? Idols. The whole time, they're wearing amulets of pagans, pagan gods. And they're carrying the teraphim that Rachel had stolen from Laban and put under her saddle, and they're still bowing down to those things. I said he would be my God. I said that. I promised it right here years ago. He would be my God. What am I doing? You see it? I believe incredible conviction fell over this man. The first thing he says to his family after God says this and the light went on, he says, that's it. Put away the foreign gods. Did you notice that in the next verses? Put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. What came over him? He has been in idolatry all of these years and didn't even see it. No wonder he didn't come home. When people are doing their own wills and pursuing their own pleasures, what's the last place they want to be? I mean, you know this. You know this. Where's the last place they want to be when they're pursuing their own wills? Here. Why? Because there's some measure of light that's poured out and exposes the heart, and they don't want to have to deal with that. They don't want to have to change. They don't want to have to stop the immorality. They don't want to have to stop the path. And so, you know, God's at a distance. God's at a distance. Oh, sure, I believe. They know their life's out of accord with the profession. Finally, after a giant backslide, when it hit rock bottom. Such a mess in life in chapter 34. The Lord's wooing call comes. Come home. This is enough. Come. No more. I've got to go to him. No more. And then the imagery that we have in Genesis 35 is that Jacob goes through a serious period of consecration to the Lord. It's really beautiful, isn't it? Did you notice verse 4? Change your garments. Wash yourselves. Then they gave to Jacob all of his gods that were in their hands and on their ears. And in front of them, what does Jacob go do? He grabs all of them, and they have a ceremony, if you will. And they go to the tree there, and they bury them. That's the language. They bury the gods. This was a practice at that time. Symbolized a lot. You know what's chilling? Is that years ago, Abraham stood right here and worshiped the Lord. And here's his grandson. Years later, after some time of rebellion and running, coming back to the very same spot and burying the idols. Don't you love the imagery? Burying the idols. Changing the garments. Building an altar. And then Abraham, right from here, went to Bethel. Jacob, right from here, goes to Bethel. Chilling. Moved by the grace of God, they wash, they purify, they bury the idols, they come up to the Lord in worship.
Well, thank you for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. That was part one of The Prodigal Comes Home, in the a study in the life of Jacob from Genesis chapter 35. You can locate that at our website at agradio.org. Tomorrow we'll air part two, but we do want to invite you to go to that website. Scroll through that website. Many resources there are given to help you with your Christian faith, to direct you to churches that are preaching the gospel and care about showing exactly what takes place here in Genesis 35, showing the whole story of redemption, what Jesus Christ brings to the lives of lost sinners. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. May the gospel of the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, in all of its glory, continue to richly bless you. Well, thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. I am Pastor Chris Gordon of the Escondido United Reformed Church. You are welcome to join us for worship this Sunday at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. The web address is escondidourc.org. Escondidourc.org. Address for worship is 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.